Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All of us at Podcast One want to say thank you for listening to this show. We would also like to ask a small favor of you. It'll take less than 10 minutes, and if you're one of the first few people to fill out the survey, we'll give you something for your time. We would like you to complete a short survey for us to help make things better around here. Just go to listeningsurvey.com, and everything will be right there for you. That's listeningsurvey.com. The first 125 people to go and complete this survey will get a $10 gift certificate to restaurant.com, and there is a chance to win an additional $100 Amazon gift card. Filling out the survey will really help us out. Go to listeningsurvey.com, and thanks for listening.
Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability, a lot of anxiety out there. Our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. The power buying process. They'll verify your income, assets, and credit in under 24 hours and give you a verified approval. Then you have the strength of cash buyer, which is important when you're out there in the real world. Once verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your rate up to 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate drops. You can't lose, man. Either way, you're going to win. Get started today. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Dawson.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from Night School, Mary Lynn Rice Cub, and Rob Riggle. Regina Grant on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, a man who barely went to day school, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for telling a friend. We love when you share the show with somebody you know. So thanks in advance. Just stop them and give them the show for free. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
You can't have a positive life with negative thoughts, right?
Rob Riggle in studio. Always excited to see Rob Riggle. I was watching the NFL on Sunday and must have saw Rob Riggle on the new commercial for a movie he is in. We'll get to in a second. I must have seen him pop up 3,000 times because, yes, you know, I have like 8 screens in front of me. So, and you made the commercial cut, the Kevin Hart movie, Night School. So good. That is, it's got to be a little bit of a roll the dice with the make the 60 or 30 second commercial cut, right?
Yeah, there's no way to know that, you know. So I'm thrilled that I made it.
It looks like it is starring Rob Riggle and Kevin Hart when you watch.
Yeah. Which we all know is not the case.
When you watch this.
Not true, but I'll take it.
I want to thank Quicken Loans for this half of the show. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Hymns, go to forhymns.com/Adam. Castrol Edge, titanium strong for maximum engine performance. Simply Safe, go to simplysafe.com/Adam. I'm going to put this out there. Dovetails nicely with the day school and the night school and all that at the beginning of the show, and I would appreciate your input. I had a conversation with my son last night about going back to school. So it was Sunday night.
How he's going to have to eventually do it?
Yes. He's going to have to get off the professional moto racing circuit, yeah, and get back. So I had a discussion with him, and I said he wants to go. Okay, so he went to Monterey to do the Rolex Historics with me, and now he wants to go to Rennsport. Rennsport's the biggest Porsche event in the world. They hold it every 2 years. This year they're having it at Monterey Laguna Seca. They're going to have billions of dollars worth of Porsches. They're all going to be on the track. 100,000 people show up, blah. The Germans are nuts for their cars, and they're crazy for Porsche. Like, they have such a brand following, and the people will be coming in from Europe and
where is
parts unknown.
Where is this held?
Laguna Seca, okay, at Monterey. Same track. Just happens to be there this year. Or maybe it's Rensport's there every year. I don't know, but it's every 2 years. Anyway, he wants to go again, and that just means more of the same. So he doesn't like school.
What?
So I said to him, it's Sunday night. Where's your misery index? Where's your dread index? Because I could remember Sunday nights going, ugh.
Depressing.
Ugh. Brutal. Mm-hmm. And it's also weird that there will be 7 more years of this uninterrupted of just being miserable and slightly less miserable on Wednesday and less on Friday, mm-hmm. but just miserable about this place you have to go to full time for the rest of your, what is eternity, by the way, 12 to 18, eternity. And so I had the conversation with him. I wish my fakakta fucking parents would have had with me, which is, what can we do? What's it at? I said, what are we at in the misery index? He said, well, now on a Thursday night might be in the, you know, mid 60s, but it's Sunday night. That's a whole week of misery. Yeah. So I got about 90, 95%. I said, what do you think we could do to get it down to like into the mid 60s? Like we could just take the misery.
Manageable.
The misery dull, index.
Dull
yes.
the pain. Dull the pain.
Yeah, just take it down.
Yeah. That's yeah. high. 90s.
Yeah.
High.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's dumb. So he does not excel in the classroom and beyond. So
he's a hell of a podcast host.
He's good at that. He's good at that. Right. He doesn't excel in the classroom, but he also got cut from the flag football team. So that's a lot of range. Now, I said, what can we do? And he said, I don't know. I can go to Rensport with you and we could just kind of blow off the whole thing. And I said, yeah.
It's a decent answer.
It does make sense. But what could we do? Like, what if we had a project that you're interested? You remember that the 10 minutes that you were interested in schools when you had like a little project to work on and you'd go, well, I'm miserable about going back to school, but I will get to finish my volcano. Yep.
But I am going to make this domino out of a shoebox.
Yeah. Right. Right. That was one of his stupid projects. Yeah. But I mean, is there a project? Is there a sport? Yeah. Is there an event?
Something
is
that turns you on. Is
there you can look forward to.
Right. It's not going to be all your classes. Right. What about your friends? Like, what can we do to take this and get you into the mid-60s versus just utter misery?
Yeah.
Oh, you're asking us.
Did he the answer.
I came up with nothing.
He just had to take me to the track.
I said, yeah. And he was talking about dogs at that point.
Make some money.
We're going to Florida. We're going to make some money. They have no income tax.
That's right.
So I said,
Italian Greyhounds.
I said, well, do they have, I said, what about projects? Like at school, like a project. You need a project. He's like, we don't really have it. They don't have projects. So I was like, all right, well, I'm fresh out of ideas.
If there's no project, though, is there, and this is old school, this is a really old school thinking, probably short-term thinking, but can you incentivize him? Like, is there a reward thing that you could put in place that if he went, and I don't think it would change maybe his pain index, but it might motivate him. Maybe he might go and perform better.
Could he possibly not have that he still wants?
See, what's going on in my house is the opposite of what goes on in prisons. In prisons, you're like, hey, could I have a blowjob? Absolutely not. I got a pack of cigarettes. Yeah. All right. All right. Yeah. Where it's on.
It's a new conversation. It's a totally new conversation.
It's a new, turn the page.
Oh, I didn't see you there.
That's prison. Yeah. My house is, hey, why don't you clean up Phil's poo? Nah. How about I give you $20 to clean up Phil's poo? I'm good.
Yeah.
Like that.
$20
with a 20 spot can't motivate him. What about stick instead of carrot? No Fortnite.
For how long? A fortnight? We should look up. What's that, like 28 days or 2 weeks or something? 14 days?
That's fort.
I like that. Oh, fort, yeah. We should look that up. 14 days. All right.
That's good. 2 weeks.
I like that.
Is there another extracurricular he could get into? Do you want to wrestle? Do you want a yearbook? I don't know if they're there yet.
Well, he's wrestling with his sexuality.
Sure.
Does that count? I think he has heterosexuality about to tap out.
I think he needs that spark. He needs that life spark. I would suggest
heteroing an armbar right now.
What is it called? Outback?
Outward bound.
Put him on an island. Put him on an island in Canada. with a bag of granola for 2 days, and all of a sudden he'll be super motivated.
Find your way home.
I like that.
Come back and work.
Yeah,
you know, I was in Sonny's position in middle school. I hated it. My misery index was in the upper 90s on Sundays. I dreaded going to school. I was a terrible student. I swear to God, what got me through middle school was. And this is nerdy, but writing articles for my high school for the local paper. I used to write write-ups of the basketball games and volleyball games, and they were published in the local, you know, little.
So take it outside of school.
But what I'm saying, I think Sonny has a little bit of that. Yeah. Sonny and I just launched a fantasy football podcast a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
It's fun. It's a cool little hobby. I think Sonny's into it. He doesn't have a lot of exuberance, but he seems to be interested and engaged.
Plays it close to the vest.
He does a little bit.
The paisley vest as he struggles with his sexuality.
But he does seem to be into. It. Is there a way that this would have to involve you talking or Lynette or Olga, someone talking to a teacher or an administrator and say, hey, Sonny does this thing, requires effort, research, whatever, it's extracurricular, he does this thing, can it be maybe done for like extra credit, like a school, like involve it in the curriculum somehow?
Because Sonny
is doing something that most kids just do not do.
How about instead, I like it, but instead I have this conversation.
Okay.
Hey, I'm 54. Brian's knocking on the door 40, right. And my son just turned 12. We come from different backgrounds. We have different tastes and different likes. There's one thing we have in common. We're all fucking miserable. We had to come back to this place on Sunday night. Is there anything you could do? Maybe, look, I know you're putting it all on my lap. Well, hey, if you studied harder, but let's go ahead and look into a mirror. Maybe you guys could make a few light tweaks, not make every fucking non-Asian miserable at having to fucking return to this fucking death camp.
Yes.
Is there, maybe it's on you. Maybe there's a reason why it's universally, like you guys should never run a Color Me Mine. You'll be out of fucking business in 8 days. And everyone would be like, I never want to know. I don't want to go
to the miserable candy shop.
That you guys are doing that makes everyone around the country simultaneously, non-Asian, simultaneously miserable on Sunday nights to go back to this place? Are you doing?
Your ability to induce misery transcends age, transcends race, transcends
everything.
Is
miserable.
Everyone.
And it's been going on for generations now. What is it? Maybe there's some light tweaks that you guys can make on your end.
Yeah, there is a common denominator here.
Yeah, like there's I give my son a gig at the school newspaper, but that just be for him. What about everyone else who's miserable here? What could we do?
I think they need to work on their Monday mornings.
Okay.
That's what they need.
Well, specifically.
When you start out, that this is going to be sound weird, and it is, but spanking.
Right.
You know, when you start, you don't just come at it full force from the North Pole with a hard one. You start a little gentle and then you work your way up progressively. You ease into the week. That's how you should start. Okay. Start with light spanking on Monday.
This is part of your TED Talk.
Full corporal punishment on Friday.
And then full corporal by Friday.
Yeah.
I agree that if there was a, you know, first come, first serve breakfast burrito.
Oh.
A breakfast chorizo and egg burrito. I would be, we need something.
Yes.
We need something tactile and visceral. Yeah. Like breakfast burritos only Monday and only for the first 200 students that show up, whatever. That's it. That'll take the edge off.
I like
Monday morning, you come in, they got a breakfast buffet, and you spend until noon just talking about the weekend. You don't have to, no school, no pressure. It's just chill out, kind of reconnect, get in the groove, ease into it. That way you don't dread Monday morning so much.
Yeah, you're right. We got to ease into this.
Ease into it.
Monday morning, 8 till nutrition, which is, or whatever the break is at like 10:10. Just get into a circle and just chat about the football weekend.
Yeah. Shoot the shit.
My dog ate my flip-flop. Yeah. Oh, man, I feel ya.
Yeah,
I can identify
with that.
Absolutely. And you just kind of, everybody just eases into it.
Yep.
Share circle.
Let's go.
With a breakfast burrito.
Very touchy-feely of you. It's good.
I know, but I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I agree. It's like when you have that homeroom. In your homeroom, it's like second period, and it's Mr. Deliberti with biology, and that fucking asshole wearing his rug who's going to fail your ass, and you're like, ugh.
That's so specific.
That guy. He did.
So specific.
He did. What actually happened.
It was my in the 10th grade, Mr. Deliberti taught, I failed me in biology, and I could remember it, like, it was so early, like, it was, and it was like, it was the longer class, because it was the homeroom. That's such a shitty short straw draw when your long class is the shitty Mr. Deliberti class, and I was like,
it couldn't be art shop.
My homeroom was also my biology teacher. She had a crew cut. She hated all of us. She drank oatmeal out of a mayonnaise jar, and then would walk around brushing your teeth talking to us.
That never happened.
I swear to God it did.
Damn.
You might know her, Rob. We hail from the same land.
My geometry teacher used to write on the board and his belly would erase everything that he wrote.
That's good.
And he'd turn around and we'd all lose our shit and then we'd all get kicked out of class. And it's not our goddamn fault.
Yeah. I agree. And also, I here's the good news. If you fail biology first semester in the 10th grade, you'll never be they'll just put you in dummy science,
yeah,
euphemistically called science class, like the sort of
general
women
science.
Yeah, that's the one that's up on the block, up on the jack stands out in the parking lot with the Well, it doesn't have we can put the wheels on if we need to move it, but it's up on jack stands.
You can figure it out in class. We're how to put a wheel on something.
Right. But you
everyone
go out there.
Has moved on to chemistry.
Yeah. Right. No, you're just perpetually in science. Science class. All right.
Good luck with the boy.
Yeah, I don't know. He's miserable.
Talk to Olga. Well, whoever's in charge over there. About the podcast thing for a course credit, because, like I said, he's doing things that kids his age just don't do. And that's, honestly, it shows that he's into things. He can do things.
He could give a weekly report on the podcast, it went. Speech.
That Outback thing is no joke. I think, we all
Outward
have
bound.
Outward Bound. What'd I say? Outback?
Outback City, yeah.
You get a great blooming onion there, too. I mean, let's not lie about that. That'd make anybody happy. That'd take the edge off any Sunday. They need to pay me for that. That Outward Bound thing. I've heard amazing stories about people go up and do that thing. Like they go to some island in Canada and they're like out on, it's remote and they're stranded and they kind of have to sort some stuff out and they realize how hard it can be. And then they get a little more grateful for their life and good things happen.
But I feel like those kids have to come from horrible conditions in the inner city. And I've just stumbled onto my answer, which is, the problem is my son comes home to basically a dog that loves him, a swimming pool, a lot of shiny white terrazzo tile, big flat panel TVs, and basically a staff that waits on him. Yeah. He needs to come back to a little more of whatever. What did Forrest Gump's girlfriend go back to? You know what I mean?
Well, child molestation.
This guy just drinking and chasing him out in a field with his belly on.
Throwing rocks at an empty shack.
Yeah, like, I'm going to get you. Yeah. And like them cowering in a cornfield
praying.
And crying
run,
and praying.
Sonny.
Right, right. Now.
Run, Sonny.
Don't look back, Sonny.
Because
make me a
school.
Bird. Fly far away.
School would then be looked forward. They would look forward to school.
Yeah.
He's balancing Rennsport against school.
Yeah,
school's never going to lose every time.
Yeah,
right?
That's a good point.
I need to start drinking more, like day drinking.
Yep.
And
this is the right answer. Yep.
And then taking something out on him. I'm not sure. Like your dad thought he could have made it to the show and he never did. And now he's taking it out on you.
And you don't have to justify it. That makes it even more confusing. Which is better.
That's better.
Right, right. That's right. That's right. And we could announce that I'm drunk and I'm miserable and I'm taking it out on you.
Yep.
All right.
Good.
Done.
I think we got a solution.
I think we did. Because let's face it. The breakfast burrito thing is fine. But he like has a breakfast burrito dispenser on his bedroom door where he just grabs one like a Pez.
Yeah.
There's a
like a Dixie cup out of a water cooler.
Yeah,
just.
Yeah. Burrito. Yeah, there's a head of the actual Jose Cuervo. There was a guy, and he literally just puts his head back like Batman and hits a switch, and a burrito drops down, and he walks around the house with it. That's it.
So you see the inherent problem.
And when he's done, he just throws it at the help.
If life is harder outside of school, he will love school.
You're right.
That's true.
Yeah. You're right. All right, let's do it. Rob Riggle, by the way, Riggle's Picks with Rob Riggle and Sarah Tiana every week on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts as well. Well, Rob, on theme, just got back from his high school reunion.
That's right.
I want to talk about that one second and see how that went. Also, I want to talk about Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. For Hims.com, one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing or pseudoscience? Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. Generic equivalents of name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. Once it goes, hard to get it back. You want to keep it now. Now's the time to go. No gas station countertop supplements, no waiting room or awkward doctor visits. Our listeners can get a trial and get a trial month of four hymns for just $5. So you get a month, you try it out for just $5. While supplies last, costs hundreds of dollars if you went to the pharmacy. See the website for full details. Go to forhims.com/Adam. That's forhims.com/Adam. Forhims.com/Adam. Rob, you just got back from your high school reunion?
That is correct. Yesterday, and I'm still feeling the hangover today. So it's a good 24-hour hangover.
What number reunion was it for you?
I've been telling everybody 20, but it was actually 30.
Okay. So we'll go with 20. I'm on 20. So you went back to Gina, and you guys went to the same high school,
yeah,
right?
Shawnee Mission South High School in Overland Park, Kansas.
Oh, yeah. Gina, you should have your 10-year anniversary coming up soon.
No, not soon enough.
Rob, I feel like you're in this, take this in the spirit in which it's intended. You're in a sweet spot of celebrity returning to high school.
Mm-hmm.
There is the version of, oh, I'm a celebrity and no one knows who you are, right. So you're not really a celebrity. Then there's like J-Lo, too big a hassle. Yeah.
Can't go back.
Then there's Rob Riggle. Like, everyone knows who you are, but you're not going to be mobbed when you get out of the car in the parking lot.
Somewhere between...
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah. Somewhere between J-Lo and Bald Brian exists Rob Riggle.
Exists Rob Riggle. Yeah, no, it's the right amount of celebrity.
Just enough, yeah.
Just enough.
Yeah, it was... what I got back was... all these people wanted photos, which is great, but they all wanted for their 15-year-old sons.
Right.
You know, they're like, and it was a
he
lot.
He loves the hangover.
I love them. A lot of people, you know, they feel the need to keep you humble, which I, you know, I'm okay, but they feel the need. So it's like, I don't know who you are. I know. I guess you're a big deal, but my kid loves you. Mind if I get a picture? And I'm like, sure. You know, okay, yes.
How else are they going to frame it, though?
I get. Well, they can just say, hey, how are you? It's been a long time. Nice to see you.
Can't.
Hey, you mind if I get a picture? I enjoy your work. Simple.
Imagine how exhausting your life must be to say that to everyone they don't know. I don't know who you are. I don't know who you are. They're in a crowd.
Yeah.
Bus.
I had a huge class. I had 500 people, I think, in my graduating class. So there was a lot of people when I was in school that I didn't know. That I graduated with, and so
I don't know who you are
at the reunion. I was like, "Hey!" I didn't pre-register because I didn't know if I was going to make it back. But the ones that did had their picture and their name on their name tag. I didn't, but I did have. I was scooping a lot, doing the old. Who is this? Then I always thought it was the worst. People are socially weird. They would cover it up and go, "Who am I?
Why
did you do
your
that?"
Favorite.
And I would sit down and go, "This is so." Of course, I'd make up some stupid name that they'd have to live with from then on.
I got three of these that drive me nuts. One is I was standing in front of Kimmel's Theater a million years ago, and these two like sort of middle-aged kind of fancy chicks came up and did like, oh, can we get a picture? Can we get a picture? Can we get a-? I said, yeah, I'll get a picture. My husband's a huge Man Show fan, you know, not so much for the ladies, but he loves that show. And I said, yeah, all right, let's get a picture. Yeah, he loved it. We didn't, you know, wasn't our cup of tea, but he was a big fan. I was like, okay, got it, understood. Let's take a picture. Yeah, I found some of the humor a little bit. I said, it's off. It's off. I'm leaving. And they're like, they're always shocked. They're always like, what?
Yeah.
What just happened? You're because I gave you three insults, mm-hmm. and on the third... I said, I shall not do you this favor anymore. Now, we can avoid this in the future. You can simply take a picture and say big fan or Man Show or something. But you had to do three laps of what you didn't like about my artistic endeavors from a few years ago. And now I'm walking away.
Yeah.
And you're screaming, what happened?
Yeah. God
I was
bless
just
you, though.
Blindsided.
God, I eat more shit than you do, I think, because I would swallow it. You're more decisive with you. You have a three-strike limit. I get up to around five sometimes before I'm finally I'm sitting there apologizing, going, I guess I should work harder and not be so. Because I do. I eat way more shit than I should, because you're right. And they do that. They give you, why don't you want to stick around for my critique?
Right.
Yeah.
Rob, can I ask Rob a question? At the expense of sounding ass kissy, what could people possibly say to you that is, what do people say to you that's shitty?
Virile. You're too interesting.
You're a fun guy.
It's always about my weight. They're like, you've lost weight. You're not as fat as you look on TV. It's always about how fat I was.
We have lost
or am.
Right.
And then it's, you're loud. You're just loud. You're so loud all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I play a lot of big characters. You don't play big characters with a whisper. You play big characters big. Get out of my face.
Do you find yourself defending yourself? I can't whisper in this role.
It's pathetic that I do it, but I don't know why, but I play this stupid game where I engage them. And I feel like I have to justify why I do the things I do. And then they're like, well, what are you working on now? And I go, oh, I've got these things going. Yeah. I'm like, fuck off. You're is dancing. What I want to say. Go to hell. Smoke a turd on the way. I don't need you. But I'm getting better at it. But God, I still eat that shit too much.
And that's Kansas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
It is.
That's it.
You know, it's funny because I'm not that way at all.
Very nice.
And it's not because I'm confident. It's just because, like, here's my whole thing in life. Everything is intentions. I do not care who scratched my car. I do not care who knocked anything over. I don't care. As long as everyone is trying positively,
right.
I have no problems. I don't care about mistakes. It doesn't behoove me to become interested in people's mistakes. I become interested in lethargy and people mailing it in or bullshitting or lying or being negative when there's no reason to be negative or whatever it is. And the second I get the negative for no reason, because all we're going to do is take a picture and then I'm going to walk away, I'm emotionally done. Dr. Drew is in.
He's
five Rob Riggles. Imagine how fat that dude would be. And he will sit and talk in airports or backstages in colleges from like chicks, like 19-year-old chicks that are just like diesel dykes, like going, what gives you the right to dispense? You know how irresponsible? And they go, well, I'm a certified physician. Yes, but do you understand what your message is dangerous? And he'll go, well, I'm sorry if you feel that. And I'll be like, bitch, what are you doing backstage? Fucking, what are you even doing here? How'd you even get here? Yeah. Who, get rid of her.
Get out.
And Drew will stop and try to make it right with
everybody.
Person.
I'm learning. I am getting better. I am getting better about gently shutting the door on that kind of silliness. But yeah, I played the game probably more than I should.
You should probably hang around with Russell Crowe, which is like, I will throw a phone at your ass.
Phone ready.
I have a rotary fucking phone that I keep on me to throw, with no cord, by the way. I want range.
Secretly, you hear those things and you're like, boy, he really lost it. And then I sit there and I go, God, wouldn't it be so nice?
Oh, God, so
just
cathartic.
One time to just take a phone and chuck it at the dickhead's head.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, but I fantasize about it quite often.
You need that gladiator money, son.
I know. Once I get that gladiator money, I'm chucking phones. Anything that's not nailed down is getting thrown at people.
That's right.
So people, I feel like you're very recognizable. I feel like people must have waited for you to return.
Loud.
Are there people that were more successful than you in this group of 500 people, you know, I mean, not in the celebrity department, I imagine, but
yeah,
there
Colbert
could,
was his classmate.
There could be, I don't know, someone who
businessman.
This guy came up with ways, you know, like one of those people. Were there any of those? Are any tragedies? People that passed? Like
we did. We had we had a lot of people pass recently. Figured out they were mainly redheads, so it was bad for the redheads in our class, but. We did have some people pass. We have some people in my class who did go on to do some amazing things. And of course it's all vague. It's always vague, right? Where I'm like, what happened to Gary? And they go, he created this algorithm
right.
that they use on search engines now. He cashed out for like 300 mil and now he's living the life. And you're like, okay, where is he? He's like, I don't know. Nobody
knows.
Yeah.
That's what he wants.
He pops up on Facebook or whatever. And you know, there are a lot of entrepreneurs and business people that are doing very well for themselves in Kansas City and elsewhere. And, you know, a lot of professionals went on to be airline pilots and, you know, but everybody that came seemed very happy.
And nobody showed up drunk trying to sell your hash on anything.
Nope.
That's good.
No. Yeah. But that's always a high wire act. Cause you're like, you remember when you told me to eat shit?
Right.
I was like, no, I don't. But I'm sure I did.
It was a different time.
It was. Totally different time.
Well, also, people have an insane recollection of interactions, too. Like, these two women who were out front of Jimmy's Theater 10 years ago who wanted a picture.
Speaking of insane recollection.
With me, they will go back and they will see their husbands back in the towns they came from. And they'll go, I saw the man show guy, Adam. We walked up. And we just asked him for a picture, and he started screaming
Get
at
away
us.
From us.
And then the friend with the big arms who shouldn't go sleeveless, but oftentimes does, will be standing going, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. He just started screaming at us. That's all. And then the husband will be confused.
Yeah.
Because we
that
don't...
doesn't sound right.
We will go, why would he... And then they'll go, I don't know. He just starts screaming.
It was unprompted.
And then everyone will nod, and then that shall be the story.
That's history.
Pass it on.
Yeah.
They will.
Pass it on.
Oh, they will.
Yes.
Yeah, every interaction. I don't know, because here's the thing. I kind of understand it. Like, I remember my interactions with celebrities that I admire, I remember when I met Tom Hanks. I can almost remember every word we exchanged and his tone, everything. So I do remember that. Not that I'm on that level, but if people have an interaction with you, they're going to remember it, and then they're going to dine out on it. Like, oh, I bumped into Riggle at the thing, and we were talking about this. Or they're going to say, oh, he was a dick. You know, he came at me sideways because I asked for a photo or whatever. So it's that thing where every interaction I have, I have to be smiley Bob. And all I want, a lot of times, I don't want to be smiley Bob. But that's how it goes.
Well, you know, at our last reunion, I wasn't there because I almost never go home. But I heard, and it swept through Facebook, that there was some big, like, come to Jesus with, like, some of the jocks and some of the nerds. And, like, I had to hear every – this was crazy. I've never heard anything. Like, somebody had some sort of – like reawakening, or they reaffirmed their commitment to God and decided they needed to go back and apologize to everyone they bullied.
Yeah, that's a sobriety thing.
That was awesome. Yeah. It might be, yeah.
Yeah,
that sounds like a 12.
That's the 7th or the 9th. I can't remember. One of those steps is go back. If you've ever been on the receiving end of one of those, it's the worst phone call you'll ever get.
I still hope to be there someday.
I've been on the receiving end of the, you know, I go, no. Listen, don't worry about it. Don't worry. It's fine. No, it's no problem. No, it is a problem. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now.
All right. Unload again.
Whatever the thing you did, which was uncomfortable, this is worse because we're sober.
Yeah. Aggravate me twice. Go for it.
Right. And also, once you tap out of that conversation, isn't it sort of narcissistic to insist on finishing it?
The idea is that you're forgiven, right?
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
But they have to say their
piece. Just cut to the end.
Has everyone in this room had some sort of amends made to them from a 12-step program?
No, never once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm sure it's coming.
So just Adam and I?
I'm sure it's coming.
No, I have.
It was Margaret Cho called me, I think. Who's had it by Margaret Cho?
Just you.
And that's step 9.
Oh, it's 9?
Almost there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm racking my brain. I don't feel like anyone owes me any amends or apologies. I'm sure but like you said, to them, people remember events. Yeah,
it's a better way to go. Like sometimes.
Oh, that's holding on to that chip. Like, you wronged me.
No, the best way to do it. Like the guy who knows all this stuff is Jimmy. Jimmy will know every guy who came to the Man Show set was a dick, or the agent that jacked us over, the executive that said the show sucked, or whatever it is. And sometimes it'll be like so and so's name will come up, and I'll go, oh, do they want to work on the whatever? And he'll go, not that person. And I'll go, why? Because that's the person who said the Man Show sucked, or Crank Yankers was weak, or like, don't you remember? And I'll go like, nah, I don't really remember. So it's probably good, although it's not good because I might end up working with that person who was an asshole. But it's best just to kind of
I think it's good not to carry that around. Yeah, you don't want to carry that around. It's too cumbersome. It makes life too hard. I will say, though, the big takeaway, although there was a lot of some social awkwardness, we all had fun. I felt like everybody enjoyed seeing everybody. We all were drinking and having fun and being merry. And it was just, you know, these things, I always get nervous about them. But they always turn out to be fun.
How many-ish people show up at this point?
There was probably well over 100.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
So it was good.
Nice.
Here's a question. You live in L.A. You had to go back to Kansas. It's not a quick flight. If you were living a pedestrian life here in Los Angeles, driving an Uber, you know, pecking away at the stand-up and nothing really going on.
Right.
Would you be as apt to go back? Now, I know there's a financial remove the financial aspect of it. The focus on the emotional.
If there was no financial aspect to it, then I probably would have gone back. If I'm grinding it out here, I probably wouldn't have.
I went to my 10-year reunion.
But no, that was Adam's question.
And I was a loser. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I wasn't comfortable being the loser. I went because I lived here, and it was like at the Hilton or the Sheraton. It was like up the street or the old spaghetti factory or something. But I just went. But I didn't like being the loser at the I had nothing going on when I was 28, and I was, and people were lawyers and doctors and stuff. Yeah. Like, I was the loser at this. I mean, I looked at my Social Security statement. I made like $3,300 that year. Like, literally, like, I was poor.
Yeah.
And in I was 1942, a loser. That's amazing.
And nothing going on. Rockefeller. Right. So,
yeah.
Would you have done it if you were a loser?
Yes, because I still have a lot of good friends, so I probably would have gone to see them. I probably would have done the old, let's talk about you, not me.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I would have done a lot of that. I would have passed the buck.
I'm between dreams right now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Hey, Max Zapata.
Hey.
Rob's a good guy to talk sports with. I think I gave a favorite tweet of a college game over the weekend that kicked the ball over the goalpost.
I did.
Once again.
If anything, it looked in.
It's really affecting the game.
Yeah.
And in a world with the instant replay down to the millisecond, all the technology, the zones and all the graphics and all the things on the screen and stuff, could we extend that goalpost a little bit in the college level?
Even college, big business. I mean, the NCAA, Nike, all the sponsors, Under Armour, whoever. I mean, let's get it right. The money's there.
Also, I don't know if you guys saw the Atlanta game on Thursday night, but Julio Jones made what I thought was a catch. He went over his shoulder. He like kind of pinned it to his helmet. He had, but it bobbled around. Yeah. Then he secured it. He was on the ground. The guy was on top of him. I don't know what a catch is, but can we just, I hate it when insane plays are nullified. Yeah. Like a great effort. The ball was thrown over his opposite shoulder. He's sort of looking in. The ball goes out. He bobbles it. He comes out with the ball. It's like he's holding the ball. I don't know. Yes, it was moving.
Right.
Why is the bar so insanely high that the guy's running at 24 miles an hour. Yeah. The ball's traveling 40 miles an hour. He goes over. It traveled 61 yards in the air. He goes over his opposite shoulder. The ball's moving. Okay. It's an amazing play.
I've made the point before, but Rob, I hate the thing where you have to have an ironclad grip on the ball in order to have control, quote unquote. Like, am I controlling this pen right now? Absolutely. Yep. I'm just moving around, but I'm controlling. I'm in control of this pen. If the ball can move a little bit, the guy's got a grip on it.
Well, that's my whole thing I did on Fox NFL.
If he drops it, that's one thing.
Yeah, the whole thing I did on Fox NFL was about the new catch rule, which, you know, they went to clear everything up. Oh, okay. So they're tired of the controversy, so we're going to clear it up for you. And then they just made it more muckety-muck. So you catch it, you have to do a football move with possession of the ball, like three steps, or the intention of, you know, it's just horse crap because it's all subjective. And I know they're trying to get away from the subjective and make it more objective, but sometimes you can't. You're just going to have to decide, did that man have control of it?
My feeling is Matt Ryan threw you a speedball and you put your hands out and attempted to catch it. First football move. Mm-hmm. Well, the first football move
was putting on cleats
and coming out to the game. That's a football move. Having a 41-inch vertical and running a 4.440, that's another football move.
I hear you.
But the guy threw you the ball, and you weren't confused by it. It stuck in your face mask. You put your hands out.
Yeah.
And you tried to catch the ball. That's a football move. I don't need you to turn up field or do anything. Your football move was attempting to catch the ball. Julio Jones was running down the field at a full clip, turned over his opposite shoulder, and did everything he could to bring this ball in. Thus, football move.
Held into the ball, so.
It would seem clear enough, but they've found a way to make it painful and really obnoxious.
All right. I will, Rob. Where were you? 9/11. Is this show airs on 9/11, right?
That's right.
It's 9/11. So, Rob, were you the only Marine on the island of Manhattan on 9/11, or were you on Manhattan?
I was in a unit. My reserve unit was the only reserve unit, Marine Corps reserve unit, in Manhattan on 9/11.
All right. Wow. So I want to hear your recollections of that day. First, I'll tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity breakdown. They will rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance up to 10%. We don't need that, people. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology. It physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight friction, and deliver maximum levels of performance for your car. Three times.
Three times, fool.
Three times stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. Look, your car's probably your second biggest investment outside of your house. And those of you who rent, well, then it's your first biggest investment. Let's take care of it. Let's put that liquid gold in there. Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine with the full synthetic Castrol Edge. We use it here. Why don't you use it there? Be smart. Castrol Edge. All right, Rob. That day, 9/11, you're a young Marine. Mm-hmm. Let's see, you just celebrated your 20th high school reunion. So we were 13 when that day happened.
Everything you said right
here
so
you
far.
Are.
Yep.
You're getting ready to go into the seventh grade, and all of a sudden, planes from the sky. No. So what was your recollection of that?
It was my mom's birthday. I called her that morning, wished her happy birthday. Then I headed off to work. I worked in Midtown Manhattan. My wife she worked closer to downtown, so I used to walk her to Grand Central, put her on a train, said goodbye to her, and I went to work. And then it was a beautiful day, just like you've always heard.
Hold on. Your mom's birthday.
Yeah. September 11th.
And Harry Connick Jr.
That's important.
I didn't know that. That's important.
I did know that because I was listening to a jazz station on 9/11, and they went, and a birthday shout out wow. to Harry Connick Jr. And then I thought, poor Harry Connick Jr., because he's in the backyard, and he's like hitting a pinata, and they're celebrating, and the neighbors are like, what the fuck is going on over there?
Knock it off.
Can you believe it? I had a son in that building.
He's celebrating.
He's celebrating.
For years, too, after that, I'm sure it was always the same.
Sorry.
Just such a...
Yeah.
I remember office assistant came in and said, hey, did you hear a plane hit the World Trade Center? And I'm a pilot, so I looked outside and I kind of thought to me, I had just gotten back from vacation, so I was behind on work and email. So I was kind of like, okay, great, you know, whatever. And I started working, but then I started thinking about it. I was like, well, how is that possible? Because it's beautiful outside. So I got up and I kind of went to find her and I was like, hey, that
so
thing.
So there's no visibility issue.
Not
as a
me.
Pilot, that's what you're thinking. What
Absolutely.
About visibility?
Because I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. It's too clear. It couldn't possibly be. So I said, well, was it a little Cessna or was it an airliner? And she goes, I don't know. Because if it was a Cessna, I could say, well, maybe a private pilot had a heart attack, you know, while he was flying. Or there's a laundry list of things. Because we all didn't know. And she didn't know. So then I was like, well, I thought about blowing it off and going back to work. But then I was like, I'm curious. So I turn on the TV, you know, New York One or whatever. And
sure.
Then all of a sudden, you see how big the fire is. So I'm like, that's a airliner. That's, you know, you don't do that with a Cessna. So I was like, holy shit. Called my wife, you know, hey, are you seeing this? Yeah, I'm seeing this. And I'm on the phone with her. Now, she was closer to downtown and she worked in a building that had these 20-foot windows, you know, panoramic windows. And they're all looking at the tower. So they're
Mine
all,
too.
The whole office is standing there watching. And then they all just screamed this blood-curdling scream when I was on the phone with my wife. It sounded awful. And I was like, what happened? And she watched the second plane hit.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, we're under attack. Became very clear at that point. This is not an accident. These are coordinated. You know, this is happening. But again, we didn't know. And then I said, I'm coming to get you. So I said, okay. So I hung up and I ran out of my building and I got out on Fifth Avenue and I'm running down Fifth Avenue. Now, at this point, all the subways had closed. They'd stopped running. So all that underground, people underground had surfaced.
Yeah.
So now there's all these people on the streets, all these people on the sidewalk. Wow. The traffic had come to a stop. Thousands of people on the sidewalk, traffic packed, not a sound. It was the eeriest. It was like a movie. It was surreal. Not a sound. And I just kept, you know, and this is before smartphones or anything. They had the old bulky, you know, yeah. So, you know, phones are kind of, nobody's really, they're kind of working, they're not working. It's sporadic. I ran down.
How far are you physically?
I'm probably a mile and a half from her. So I run down, I get her, and I take her back to our apartment. Which is in Midtown. We get back. It's safe. But we don't know. We heard that, you know, we heard the Pentagon was hit, and we heard there was a fourth plane out there. Like, we didn't – it was just a very chaotic – and we didn't know if there was more to come, less to come. So they closed down the bridges and the tunnels of Manhattan, and my reserve unit was in Manhattan. We were actually in Manhattan proper. So we got activated the night of September 11th. I got a call – that evening from my commanding officer saying, hey, we just got activated, MTU 17, report to One Police Plaza downtown tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. in your utilities. So I was like, all right. And I was on active duty from September 12th to the 30th, working on the rubble piles. And what we did was just go down and, yeah, there it is. That was me.
And all you had was that little surgical mask?
That's it.
Is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Digging away.
Yeah. yeah, so that was like, that was probably 3 days after maybe. you know, when we first got down there, there's six stories of rubble. And it's unbelievable. When a 106-story building collapses, it crushes all that concrete into powder. So it's this moon dust everywhere. And it, you know, the downtown's like canyons, these concrete canyons. Well, all that dust, as you saw in the videos, you know, how it just shot through the canyons. So there was moon dust all the way from Police Plaza all the way down to the ferries.
Wow.
I mean, it was the lower Manhattan was just caked in it. And there was debris everywhere, debris. I mean, the landing gear of one of the planes was two blocks over. And they had put, you know, obviously they had taped it off or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, for the investigation purposes. But you could see how the impact and the destruction was unbelievable. And then the smell, you know, all the fire trucks were burnt out, but they were still there. They were skeletons. So all the wheels were gone because of the flame, the fire and the... but they were relics. It was a combat zone. It was massive destruction on a scale in Lower Manhattan you couldn't imagine. And the buildings surrounding the Twin Towers, you know, they were all in jeopardy because it looked like a movie. It looked like Godzilla had taken a claw and scratched out the front of an entire building because a whole gaping hole was right down the middle of this building. And so we're down there working, and we don't, you know, those buildings can hold 50,000 people when they're full, each one. We thought at the time, now we remember we were going on very little intel, things were still unfolding. We thought there could be 20,000, 30,000 people dead, you know, when that went. And there's missing people signs all over the place, and it was just awful. So we're down there, and we think there could be a bunch of survivors in the six stories of rubble. So we can't bring in heavy machinery. We can't bring in the bucket loaders. We can't, because you'll have cave-ins and all this stuff. So you had to go up by hand, like ants going up an anthill, and pass buckets up and pass buckets down and pass buckets up. And so we worked 12 hours on, 12 off, 12 on, 12 off, 12 on, 12 off from the 12th to the 18th. And then I think at that point it was considered no longer search and rescue. It was search and recovery because they had determined the heat and the, you know, lack of food or water. So at that point, they switched it, and they were able to bring in some of the bucket loaders. But I'm telling you, while we were up there working, they would drop listening devices in, and they would blow a whistle, which means everybody be quiet, and you could hear a pin drop down there. And they'd have the listening devices, and they'd listen for about 2 or 3 minutes. If they heard nothing, back to work. So everything started again. And then they think they heard something, so they drop listening devices. We'd all stop. Then they had an old-time air horn, like a World War II, you know.
Air raid siren.
Yeah, and... if they fired that up, it meant get out of there because one of the buildings was threatening to collapse. Because I think like a day after, maybe 2 days after, one of the buildings did collapse. So there was buildings that were not safe. And they would fire that thing up every now and then because the winds would get something or, you know, I don't know. But it was all we knew is when they sounded that horn, boogie.
Yep.
And so sure enough, I remember one time they blew that thing and we all started running off the piles and we're running down the street trying to get out to the sides. And they have those, you know, portable night lights, you know, or spotlights or whatever, but they are on wheels. It's like a generator with a big spotlight on it. Mm-hmm. But it has that long hook for the trailer.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right? So they had that anchored because, you know, for the night work.
Yeah.
Right. And as we come off the piles, you came around the corner and, you know, it's a bum rush because you think the building's going to collapse. And I got my legs pinched between the neck of the trailer. And everybody pushing behind me, and there was that split moment. It's like they're going to break my legs because there's too much peep. There's too many. Right. The rush is too much, and they don't see I'm pinched up against this thing. So I gave it my best basketball, you know, Charles Barkley ass drive, elbow drive. I took the paint, and I jammed everybody back. But I did it enough to get my legs over the thing, and then stood up on the thing, telling people to go around it, because that's how scary. And everybody's on pins and needles. You know, it was very. Tricky time. And then after the 18th, I ended up working at Police Plaza coordinating military civilian efforts. But as far as like cadaver dogs and things like that. And I worked there till the 30th. Now, I had a very high security clearance for my job. So I knew they were going to, we were at war. I was a captain. I knew they were going to need people. So I volunteered to go back on active duty, and it didn't take long. Central Command picked me up pretty quickly. I got my orders on November 10th and reported to Central Command on November 17th, and then I was in Afghanistan November 30th of 2001. So it didn't take long. Didn't take long.
Was so a couple things. Not since Doug Benson's story about, have I seen this,
this kind of intensity.
Intensity, and I don't use the word hero, but I did it with Doug. Oh, no, wait, he smoked pot. That's right. He was just watching TV. But anyway, did you find anything? How many people were there working physically on the brick by brick sort of dismantling of the 6 foot, 6 story pile of rubble? Like, how many souls were just sort of on the pile the couple days afterward, would you say?
Oh, there were several hundred. I would guess probably in the 500 range.
And is there anything you found that haunts you or that would be considered like a personal effect versus, you know, something that was masonry-based?
Yeah. No, I mean, there was, you know what, when we would take our breaks, I would go over by this the old church down by Wall Street there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of hydrate, you know, have some water, grab a bite to eat before you go back. But I remember every time I walked over and walked back, because I was on the corner of the second tower, World Trade Center 2 or whatever, on the southeast corner. That was, there's an old Burger King over there that was kind of our headquarters as well, like where we set up or whatever. And our little ant, you know, trail kind of went up that side. But everybody had different places to kind of report to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that's where I worked out of. But as I would walk to a break or as I would walk back, there were pictures from people's cubicles, you know, everywhere. You'd pick up family pictures. You could pick up stuff from Cantor Fitzgerald, like, you know, old memos, you know,
It was this sort of litter from the site that just blown around everywhere.
Yeah.
I was there too. Not doing what you were doing, but living downtown and working downtown, saw everything you saw, and for weeks and weeks, the paperwork that was flying around, it was just, you just got used to it. It was everywhere.
Was the it was smoldering while you were cleaning, right? Like there were still things on fire.
Yeah, there was. I would say maybe I can't remember now exactly, but I would say a couple days, two or three, maybe it was a week. I lost track a little bit. But one of those days it rained.
Uh-huh.
And it turned a lot of that moon dust into a paste.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a very distinct smell to it. We've all smelled wet concrete or whatever, but when that rain hit the moon dust, made it into that paste, there was always that burning metal smell.
It's like really sour, like pungent and sour.
Yeah. It's a very distinct smell. And you know, probably never smell it again, I hope. But yeah, it was very distinct. And then that pasty, concrete-y smell.
Wow. I talk about right in the thick of things, right in the middle of it. I know just from doing the construction I did, there's nothing worse than the concrete dust. I always tell people all the time.
This is a good transition.
Yeah. This is rough. No, they keep thinking, they think the bad part is the work. That's the dust. It's like it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And you can't get away from it. And
we remember the images of the people just after, you know, they're running away like ghosts. They're just covered in, you know, they're covered in that stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
I remember coming home in my utilities after my shift or whatever, and it would be in my hair. It would be, it gets in the creases of your eyes and your wrinkles or whatever. And, you know, you sweat and it accumulates all day.
Any health worries since then?
No, I don't know. I haven't.
Do they have a protocol? Do they have like the first responders should go in once a year and get a, you know, lung whatever X-ray, or is there none of that?
If they do, I don't know. I haven't paid attention to that. But
it's interesting because there was a lot of talk about it about 5 to 7 years ago, I'd say, a lot of these illnesses that were coming on and lung stuff and all that kind of stuff. And it was a lot of people that were there. Now, again, it's kind of like asbestos, which is a radon or something. They make a huge deal of it, but so many people have been exposed to so much stuff and so many industries for so many years that it doesn't make sense that a few weeks in this situation would have that effect on you for the rest of your life. But I still thought there would be a protocol. Like they would go, everyone who was here for this period of time once a year has to get a blood test or something.
Maybe they have something like that. And I'm sure, because that does sound like something they would do, but I don't know anything about it.
Good. Even bigger hero. Let me tell you what makes you a hero. Simply Safe. Here's why I'm a big fan of Simply Safe Home Security. It's prepared for everything. If a storm takes out the power, if your phone line gets cut, keypad destroyed, Simply Safe is ready. They'll get you the help you need. Maybe you don't need everything, but they're ready for everything, even if it's the worst case scenario. Let's all get ourselves some Simply Safe. There's two I's in there. Simply Safe, S-I-M-P-L-I Safe. It is great. It is always ready. I have it. Gargis has it. Dawson has it. Max Pata has it now. When you peel and stick, you don't have to drill anything. You don't have to pull wires. It's up and running in under an hour. It's just $14.99 a month. No contracts, no hidden fees. I recommend Simply Safe to everyone I know. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Get your box. You get all set up. Shows up on your doorstep. Put it up. The batteries last up to 10 years, and you're ready to go in under an hour. simplysafe.com/Adam. All right. Mary Lynn Rice Cub is here. We'll talk to her about
the same movie. Where she was on 9/11.
About the same movie you guys are both in.
Night School.
Yeah.
Which is in, let's see, it's coming September 28th, really, in theaters? I saw 500 commercials for it. I thought it was coming out even sooner. So
good marketing.
Getting behind this thing. Yeah. I mean, you must have watched football on Sunday, right? You see the 5,000?
I did see the one commercial you're talking about, though, where I made the trailer, which I was very happy about. I did catch that, and I was very pleasantly surprised. Normally that doesn't happen, so I was happy about that. And
you're very loud.
This movie.
Yeah, it seemed loud. It seemed heavy and loud.
Heftier.
Heftier.
Not as hefty, though. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's husky and loud, that's for sure.
They say the camera adds 10 decibels.
But it's a great movie, and Mary Lynn is fantastic in it.
It is fun to watch football, and you go, oh, there's Rob Riggle. Oh, he's coming in tomorrow. Good, that's Rob Riggle. And then you're sitting next to Kevin Hench, and they're showing a Last Man Standing promo for Fox. And it's like, oh, hey, your TV show. Hey, there it is. Like, it's fun to... It'd be nice if it was me, you know, once.
Oh, he's a bridesmaid.
Just once, but it is nice to at least point at the people it's working out for.
It'll come around. I think you're doing all right.
just want to watch one of those Fox football Sundays and just have my big face pop up. That's all.
Duly noted.
Duly noted. Night School, and we'll talk to Mary Lynn about that in a second. We'll take a quick... Oh, the TV show. Sorry. Yes. The, let's see. Wait, now I got Mary Lynn's in front of me. The
Ski Master.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Hear this thing is a huge hit.
It's doing well. It's doing really well. I think it's number one on Sony Crackle right now. And Mary Lynn's makes a cameo in that as well.
So
number one.
People should go to SonyCrackle.com and check out Rob Riggle's Ski Master Academy. All right. Take a quick break. We'll do some good sports. And we'll be right back after that.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One Sports. Dave Dameshek here, Adam Carolla over there, as we have now transcended week one in pro football. We now look ahead to week two. Join me on the Dave Dameshek football program, wherever you find your podcasts, and hear what's going down after week one. And like I say, as we head into the second week of the grand old game. I don't think anybody calls it that. But anyway, what's happening, Ace?
Doing well.
Well, the first weekend of fantasy football is also in the books, and I promised a little delayed, but I promised to tell you yesterday the tale of the fantasy draft as quickly as possible, as much as we need to go over it. I know August told you the tale last week. Our auctioneer, not extraordinaire.
That is Mike August. It's Sal, it's you, it's John Hamm, it's Kevin Hench. And a mixed batch of other folks.
The sporty guys,
Simmons.
Bill Simmons, the Dutch Mook, Elliot Blutt, Kimmel's lawyer pal from childhood. We said Dan Dratch is in the league.
Mm-hmm.
His partner is Hench, Craig Powell and Brian Barton, two producer guys from Kimmel and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Barbieri, of course, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Your friend from Cranky Anchors and Man Show.
Sure,
Kimmel and Beyond.
Windy City Heat.
And Randy, of course.
Brad. Oh, yeah.
Brad Randy. It was quite a scene. So I had, for anyone tuning in quickly, I won last year, and as the rules state, this is Sal's concoction from about a decade ago, and he decided to jazz things up a little bit at the height of Survivor, and everybody was into it. He said, why don't we do the same thing, night of the draft? The reigning champ gets to kick out anyone of his choosing for whatever reason he wishes to kick somebody out. They're out for a year, and whoever was kicked out the preceding this year is back.
I think this is – sorry for jumping on there, but – I try to explain the differences between men and women, and this is uniquely male. Women wouldn't go for this. They wouldn't think of it. They'd say a spa day for the winner, whereas we think of something cruel for the loser. And we also like the sort of random fate part of the whole equation as well.
Yeah, but you know what? I think you assume a little bit too much about what all men are made from. We're not made from the same stock. As you know, Ace, I'm a more delicate flower than others, so I don't like it.
Hench
is delicate. Simmons is delicate. As a result, we're probably the three loudest voices every year. Can't we do away with this thing already? This is awful. It hurts feelings. Who wants to get kicked out by a league? But then there's Tall John, who loves it. He thinks it's hysterical. Sal, obviously, is tickled by it and beyond. So, of course, we lose every year.
We always had the wheel of breakfast at Kevin and Bean with Kimmel a million years ago. And we would spin the wheel to see where we would go eat for breakfast after, which is really lunch, after you're done with the morning show at 11 or noon, whatever it is. Always something to look forward to, all heading out. Work is done at, you know, it's 11 in the morning. We've had our postmortem, and we're all just going to head out somewhere to eat. And we had the places we like to eat on there for breakfast, Bob's Big Boy and such. But we had the Talleyrand on there that no one liked. And we put it on
that's,
there.
That's the best part, yeah.
And if it landed on the Talleyrand, we had to go to the Talleyrand.
Yeah, and that, misery loves company.
It was just it was that much sweeter when it landed on Bob's Big Boy. You need a little salt to bring out the sugar. That's all right.
Yeah, it's exactly right. You need that conflict. You need that downside to make the stakes even greater for when the good
I'm
thing
saying
comes
I don't think women would add a place they did not want to eat to that wheel.
Yeah,
that's
you're
what
right.
I'm saying.
You're absolutely right about that. So so my number was up. I won the league. So I had, like we talked about last week, Mark Garagos drafted a document, a legal document that stated that as the champ and with my kickout powers, I will not kick out the signer of this document. In return, you can't kick me out for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how this was going to go based on what I said earlier about, you know, some people love this thing. And so I thought they might like the spirit of the risk, you know, and so they wouldn't go it. But as I started to go through it and I stood at the door because we did it in the Kimmel, very fancy Kimmel green room now. And so I stood outside of there and as people arrived, I started to offer this contract to people and people quickly capitalized. Now, they don't want to get kicked out. And so Tall John and Jamie signed and then I was kind of in my head. People had said, kick out Simmons. You got to kick out Simmons. And during the day, Simmons does the worst perennial move. Every year, right before the draft, he announces to anyone who will listen, I hope you kick me out. I'm sick of fantasy football and I'm sick of this league. So please kick me out. Then Sal says, just reminder, here's the draft time. Here's where we're meeting, all that kind of stuff. Simmons immediately follows up with an email like, well, only a few more hours till Damashek kicks me out, and I can't wait.
Right.
And then I want to kick him out now. I want to kick him out just for that, because he thinks he's playing mind games with somebody. You know, not with Damashek.
Well, not the Tri-Rivers Connect Four champion.
What do you think? Yeah.
For 1981 through 1988.
Close enough.
You're
going to penetrate this brain? Try again, friend.
Hannibal Lecter meets Lex Luthor. Not that brain.
Yeah,
you don't play games with that brain.
Thank you for that, Adam. Yes. So Simmons was overmatched, even if he didn't realize it. But as it started to run up, so I'm thinking Simmons and maybe Randy, because that's always funny to kick out Randy, and who knows. And as I realized, everybody is signing. And the critical one, Sal, about halfway through shows up. Oh, yeah, I'll sign that. And he signs it. And now I realize anybody I offer to is going to sign it. And then I fall back on, I feel bad that it's going to hurt somebody's feelings. So then I just decided in the moment, whoever shows up last is who I'm going to kick out. Because everybody's going to sign it. And as it happened, it was Elliot Blutt who showed up last. So he was dispatched. And we still had a good time. Ham won the MVP of the night. He was very funny throughout, cracking wise, taking shots at everybody, also mixing in some Mercedes-Benz live reads off the cuff.
Wow.
The 360 GS, go in big or go home, whatever, that kind of stuff throughout. It was delightful. Randy was pacing to and fro the whole night, in and out of the room, shouting things from the other room so no one else could hear him, yelling things. You nominate a player. It's an auction. So you say, Ben Roethlisberger for $3, and people bid it up until somebody until somebody wins him. Randy's move all night was, Sammy Watkins, $10, going once, going twice, sold to Randy's team. F, I didn't want him. Then why did you just nominate him? This went on all night long. Him missing people's names and everything else. So he didn't want the guys that he kept getting stuck with somehow. But the only people only person sticking him with these guys was himself. He kept nominating them and winning them. And Sal's doing his wiseacre stuff. And me, Simmons, and Hench are more nerdy and serious about it. So not as loud. Barbieri also quiet. Also laser focused on his draft. All but the LVP, as always, Mike August, because he's our auctioneer. Now, listen.
Loser? Wait. Well, MVP, let's see. Wait. The MVP is the most...
Least valuable.
Least valuable player.
He didn't lose anything because he doesn't have anything
on
the line.
He told me that Hammy was lighting the room on fire.
He really
just
was.
Just crushing it.
Yeah. He really had a banner performance.
He also announced, former attorney Mike August, that this paperwork was signed under duress and would not hold up in any courtroom.
Is that what he said?
That's what he claimed.
Well, now there's some cynics out there saying, so what? Why do we have to abide by this? Why don't we just kick him out anyway next year, Dave? And I welcome you trying to kick me out with my legal document in hand. What are you going to do? Remove me physically from the room?
You don't want Garagos and the full weight of his law firm.
I'll see you in court.
Down on you. You do not want that guy saying to his secretary, put it all on hold. Well, Chris Brown has just been accused of arson. It can wait. But you're on a cash retainer. Somebody has crossed the line with Sheck and his fairy tale
what is
football.
What are people thinking? Sal wins next year. You're out anyway, Velville. I don't care. You're out of the league. I don't care what the document says. All right, well, then I'll see you in court. What, are we going to just suspend the draft for the next 3 weeks?
No,
until Garagos' schedule's free?
No.
Come on. It's nonsense. But August is the worst auctioneer because he does this bit. He does this thing the whole time. He changes his cadence. So he'll say, like, going once, going twice, sold to Tony Barbieri. Then the next time he'll go, like, going once, going twice, sold to Barbieri. And people are like, what are you doing? Right. You didn't give anybody a chance. Or then he'll upset you if you think you're about to get a steal, like, oh, I have Travis Kelce, and he's only going to go for $11. And August will then choose to make subjective remarks about it, like, Travis Kelce's only going to go for $11? Everybody better get in on this quick. Shut up, why don't you? I'm trying to win this for a song. And he announces to everybody, and he also... More than one person accused August of favoring John Hamm. He would give him, he gave him a lot of time. Well, Hamm, do you want to bid on this one? And give him like 20 seconds, like, just do your going jazz. That's what you would do to me if Hamm had him for a song. He was playing favorites.
Listen, I agree. I'm going to play favorites with betonline.ag, but he did tell me in quite some detail about how smitten he was with John Hamm and his performance that night. So I would not argue that factored in. BetOnline.ag. Football's here. You get all the action for college and NFL football as well. Don't wait to make your online wagers. Head to BetOnline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use the promo code PODCAST1. Receive 50% off or 50% sign-up bonus today. So you get your 50% sign-up bonus today at PODCAST1 and betonline.ag, exclusive partner of Podcast Sports Net and Podcast One Sports Net. Great NFL and college football matchups all week long. Get in on the action today. Sign up today, betonline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1, that's the number one, for a 50% bonus when you sign up. Take advantage of this incredible offer right now at betonline.ag. your online sportsbook expert.
With week two fast approaching, more quickly than you realize, I do intend to finally get to the warehouse and watch football with you and Sal and Santora and the gang, Ace. I can't wait for
Please.
That. Hey, before then, we'll have another good sports for you. As a matter of fact, we'll have it tomorrow here on Podcast One Sports. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek out.